Welcome to On Tour with Sports 24. I'm Emma Saunders and this is your guide to the world's most iconic sporting cities. Each episode we'll be heading to a different part of the world to give you an inside view into what makes it a sporting city. So we're going to be finding out what the locals recommend to get a real flavour of its sports and culture and what you should experience when you come to visit. It's what Sport 24 is all about, a sports channel that connects onboard passengers to those unmissable live sporting moments. So whether you're flying at 35,000 feet or relaxing on your ocean cruise, you can be watching the game live. Sounds like the only way to travel, so buckle up and sit back. You're listening to On Tour with Sport 24.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Sport 24, we'd like to welcome you to New York.
Yes, and for this episode, we're in the city that never sleeps, New York. And as always, I'm joined by our TikToker extraordinaire, Rob Adcock, who's actually in a very special location for this episode. So Rob, drum roll please, where can we find you?
I am in Hell's Kitchen in New York City, and I've never been happier. This is like the best podcast for me ever.
Well, I've teed it up as the city that never sleeps, and I imagine you've got some jet lag, haven't you? It's not too far away from the UK, but was it a red eye flight you got?
It was, but it's just amazing. The second that you get here, it feels like you're in a movie. You walk up and down the streets and it's just like, oh, I recognize that from a film. And it feels like you're in the center of the world. It's one of those places where you get here and you don't realize how much sport is interwoven into the city until you get here. Even if it's a case of you're not going to watch the match, you might be going to watch it in a bar, or you're walking down the street and someone's trying to sell you some kind of merchandise that's kind of related to one of the sports. It's just everywhere, and people just kind of identify themselves as fans of each team. And you walk down the street and it's like every third or fourth person has got some kind of sporting memorabilia on, or some kind of sporting jersey, be that a hat or a pair of trainers or a shirt. I got here when we landed originally, was the New York Marathon. So instantly, obviously I didn't take part, not me. I don't even want to drive that. We're walking down the street and you just see people draped in the orange New York Marathon capes. And then you walk past a bar and there's the NFL on, and it's the best place. I know this is one of the things that kind of whenever we talk about a podcast about sporting cities, and we've been really lucky to talk about loads of different amazing places, but if someone picked me up and said, right, you've got to move to one of the cities that you've talked about, where are you going to go? This would be the place I'd move to. I know that'd be a weird thing for someone to just say, right, you've got to move somewhere in the world. I know it's probably not going to happen, but I would quite happily move here tomorrow. Can I give you one tip for people that are coming here? If you come here and you're not used to American sizes of portioning, all you need to do, this is my budget travel coming out well and truly at this point, if you order one meal, that genuinely will do for two of you. Like, I've been eating like a sandwich, I've not been able to finish it, and I've got it for like later on in the day. I'm just like, oh, I've still got my turkey sandwich. What a result.
Well, it's great to have you on the ground as our tourist as such, but we also have the pleasure of being joined by a New York local for our journey for this one, and that is sports broadcaster, radio host, journalist, Damon Amendolara. Damon, thank you so much for your time. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having us. We're putting Rob on the city tourism board. He is supposed to come here. He's going to wait at Ellis Island at Statue of Liberty and just welcome everybody. This is why New York is beautiful, everybody. Your turkey sandwiches are huge.
I was going to say, I think you're joining us. It's morning, isn't it, New York at
yes,
the moment? It is. There's a bit of an international record going on. But I imagine what Rob's been saying there has got your stomach rumbling a bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, especially when you work morning sports radio. You get up at about 3:45 in the morning. So this is, even though it's, you know, morning here in New York City, it feels like it's lunchtime or dinner for me. So I'm ready to hit all those pizzerias, all those delis, all those wonderful places that Rob was just talking about.
God, I don't think you'd ever go hungry, would you? But tell us a little bit more about New York. I think, as we've mentioned, Rob's doing a bit of a whistle-stop tour, but it's a local. What can you tell us? What's it like day-to-day, living, breathing the Big Apple?
Well, New York is very proud of its hugeness, of its bigness. It feels like we are in the center of the universe. It is the center hub for finance, is the center hub for entertainment. It's the center hub for marketing, and it's the center hub for sports. The population booms around here. So as Rob was just mentioning, you've got fans of every sport and every team somewhere in this city, and there's lots of them. There's legions of them. Nobody has a small fan base. And one thing that New York prides itself on that no other American city can say is out of the four major sports, we have multiple teams in every sport. We have two basketball teams in the NBA, two NFL teams in professional football, two baseball teams in Major League Baseball, and three local hockey teams in the National Hockey League. So on any given day, there are nine professional sports teams that may or may not have a game. So as Rob was mentioning, the sports bars are at every corner. Flags of all these teams wave all around the place. You have subways filled with people getting on and off, going to the ballparks, going to the arenas. And when you win in New York, there is no place else like winning here, because when you win a championship in New York, you have a parade down the Canyon of Heroes, which goes down downtown Manhattan through all the skyscrapers and huge buildings down to City Hall, where there's a big pep rally, and they give those players a huge applause, and people hang out the sides of buildings and rip up ticker tape and confetti and throw it down. So when you win here in New York, you are a legend forever, and you have a moment that you just simply cannot have anywhere else. So we do feel like it, whether it's arrogant or not, we do feel like we are the center of the sporting universe as well.
Yeah, well, it certainly sounds like it. Do you find that people, for that reason, tend to pick one sport and follow that? Because if you're out here as a hockey fan, an NFL fan, trying to squeeze into an NBA as well, I don't see a way to have time to work, have a family, get a sport every night for a week.
No, people enjoy being a fan of as many teams as possible in all the sports, because then it hedges your misery, because everybody lives and dies by their team. If their team is not good, oh, at least there's basketball season. At least there's baseball season. At least there's football season. But we're a bunch of sports addicts here in the States. As I mentioned, we have four professional sports leagues, plus there's MLS, which is professional soccer. We have two soccer teams in MLS as well, NYCFC, that plays at the home of the Yankees. And then we have the New York Red Bulls as well, which just plays on the other side of the river in New Jersey. So we love everything, and attendance is usually really good in all of those stadiums and ballparks. You got to remember, the tri-state area, which is where New York City is, and the three states that border it, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, there's more than 20 million people in this area. So there's always something for somebody. And usually most people adopt a team in all four or five of the professional sports leagues.
I don't know whether, Damon, you have to keep your card close to your chest as a sports broadcaster, but who are your teams? Who do you support?
I grew up in a household with my dad, who was a huge New York Giants football fan. He dates back to the 1950s with them. So I grew up watching on our old Sony Trinitron TV that was on wheels and cased in wood. I watched the New York Giants of the 1980s win two Super Bowls, and I was hooked on the NFL for life. I've been a football fan ever since. But my family also were Brooklyn Dodgers baseball fans. And if you were a Brooklyn Dodger baseball fan back in the 50s, before they left for Los Angeles, you hated the Yankees. I mean, really hated the Yankees. So I grew up in a household where my grandma was the most vicious of the baseball fans. And she said, you cannot root for the Yankees. So I became a New York Mets fan because the Dodgers had left for LA. And it's not okay to root for an LA team, because we are New York and you cannot root for an LA team out here. So I'm a huge New York Mets fan as well. I still have season tickets to the New York Mets. I try to get out there as much as possible. So those would be my two teams that I really, really still love. Even as a journalist, I have to, you know, I have to let that fan side come out as well.
Well, it's amazing to hear from you, Damon, as a local, you know, somebody that spent so much of their time in New York and getting a sense of what that vortex is like, sort of 365 days a year. But seeing as you are in New York, Rob, also, we thought we'd make the most of you being out there on the ground. So we have sent you out and about to explore all New York City has to offer.
About a 35-minute bus ride from the centre of Manhattan is the MetLife Center. Now, when you're on your way here, you see the stadium lit up in the distance in the green of the New York Jets. And the only way to describe it is it's absolutely massive. When the bus drops you off, you're greeted by rows and rows of vehicles for the tailgate. Now, I've never been to one of these before, but it's unlike anything I have ever seen. Basically, huge car parks are taken over by fans. They bring trucks, camper vans, the lot. It's just one great big party. There's DJs with decks, people have set up grills and barbecues. There's even widescreen tellies outside showing up all the build-up on the telly. Now, people just stand around here for hours, groups of friends drinking, chatting, throwing American footballs to each other, some people dancing to the music. It's just a load of fans enjoying themselves before the game. But when it's time to go in, you see the giant advertising boards right outside the stadium say it's time to enter for the match to start. And that is where we're going now. It's not really until you get in that you appreciate the scale of this place. The lights are so bright, it could be in the middle of the day. There are just tiers and tiers of seats above me. It feels like they go on for miles. 82,000 people will be in here. It'll be pretty much packed tonight. It's the first time that I've been to a competitive NFL match. So after the American National Anthem, the game will start. Should be fun. So last night, it was interesting. I'll never be able to get over how much it feels like every single thing that happens, every single play in the NFL just seems really important. Things that, if you don't know what's going on, look really insignificant, but people just get so pumped for. So that was last night. I'm currently on my way to the world-famous Madison Square Gardens, right in the heart of Manhattan, just a stone's throw away from Times Square and all the famous landmarks that you instantly think of when you think of New York. It's still a real novelty whenever you see a yellow cab drive past. Well, tonight is the NHL. It's the ice hockey for me. The main difference I've noticed so far between the NHL and the NFL, whereas last night, people seemed to get to the game hours and hours before it actually started. Whereas tonight, we're 45 minutes away from the game starting, and people are still outside in the bars wearing the blue of Rangers. So when you walk into the building, you go up the escalators and onto the concourse, and you're greeted by the smell of popcorn and hot dogs, which I'm not complaining about. You make your way through the crowds into the arena, and it is just vast. It holds just under 20,000 people in here. The first thing that you notice is the huge scoreboard, which hangs over the centre of the arena. The ice just looks perfect. It's the Detroit Red Wings in town tonight. Should be a good one. Venue 3 is a trip to the Barclays Center. I've left Manhattan and I'm now in Brooklyn. It was like a tourist bucket list on the way over here. We walked past Wall Street, down over the Brooklyn Bridge, took some photos of the Statue of Liberty. The family WhatsApp is going to be popping later on when I send all these pictures to my mum. Brooklyn's got a slightly different feel to Manhattan. It doesn't quite feel as frantic. The subway that you can use to get to the Barclays Center brings you right outside of the front of the venue, all lit up in blue. Great big gaping entrance. Tonight is the Brooklyn Nets against the LA Clippers in the basketball. It's the NBA. So similar to the MSG last night, the arena at the Barclays Center here, the concourse is just packed with all the food and drink that you can think of. I treated myself to a little hot dog, because why not? Now in front of me now, the players from both sides are warming up. Now I know it's the most obvious thing to say, but you forget just how tall some of the players are. I'm just a few rows from the court, and I've just been chatting to this bloke who was down with the players a few moments ago. Now he's the same height as me, but next to the players, he looked like a little tiny toddler. I just love the squeak of the players' footwear as it rubs against the court. They make basketball, the players, look so effortless. One player's just been sinking three-point shots one after another like it's nothing. No biggie. Now, the scoreboard says it's just over 10 minutes until the game begins. I'm going to get a drink and enjoy myself.
Well, my goodness me, Rob, you have squeezed in an awful lot in, what, 24, 48 hours, and I imagine there was a whole host of highlights. But the Jets, I think, is something we're going to hear you talking about for a long time.
Even if this podcast goes on for 3 hours, and sometimes I wouldn't be surprised if they do, I still wouldn't be able to get over how much I enjoyed that match. So I'll take you from a practical point of view. So if you're staying in Manhattan and you want to go out and see the Jets, this is the kind of practical stuff you don't get on another podcast, you know, Damon. This is the kind of level of granular detail that we live for.
I like this.
So we just jumped on one of the buses. If you go to the big coach station, it takes you straight there, no hassle. You go straight out to the MetLife Center. It takes about 20, 25 minutes if there's no traffic, which in New York City, there usually is. And you just come over the brow of the hill and you just see this kind of beacon of green lit up for the New York Jets. And it is just, in the UK, obviously, we go to a lot of stadiums, be them football stadiums or whatever it is. But this is just like some kind of green beacon, like some kind of sporting mecca that you just see in the distance. And when you get closer to it, it's just absolutely enormous. We got dropped off on the bus, and being a British person in America, you think, oh, I wonder what's going on here. But it's like you get off the bus, it's like there's a party happening everywhere in the car parks. And we mentioned this briefly in the Miami podcast that we did. And you get off the bus and you're just hit by like a cacophony of noise and sound and smells and people. I got off, Damon, the other day, and there was two DJs with full decks, speakers and everything, and people were having a proper rave. And they've got these huge, great big like mobile homes, you know, they basically big caravans that you can drive everywhere. And they're all emblazoned with New York Jets players, all done in the green and the logos, and there's food everywhere, there's barbecues. I just wandered around being a proper typical English person. I just went up to one of them right at the top and said, excuse me, I'd like to buy a beer. Could I buy one from you? He's like, no, this is all free, because it was like a local car dealership. And I ate like a king. I just sat there just eating burgers and pasta, just having a beer, just chatting to people, flags flying. And then you get into the actual event itself, and it's just, it's 9 o'clock at night or whatever it is. And the lights in there and the show that's in there, it could be in the middle of the day. It feels so bright. I don't possess the skills to put into words just how good it is. If you've never been to an NFL match before, do whatever you can to go and watch on, because it's not just a game, it's entertainment beyond your wildest dreams.
Well, Damon, would you say, I suppose you're probably going to be a bit biased being a New Yorker, but is there something special when you look across the entirety of the NFL about the Jets and that experience, whether you're a tourist or a regular match goer?
Well, New York certainly likes to go big. And so our tailgates for Jets games or Giants games tend to be big. And there's a lot of ethnic cuisine and history here. So you can go to a tailgate for a Giants or Jets game, and there's a big Italian spread with a bunch of pasta and eggplant parmesan, etc. And then you could get a whole Greek side of, you know, gyros and this and that. You can go and get barbecue. You can go and get this, that. There is tons of different food that is served, and people go all out. And so Rob has hit on the secret special sauce of football here in America. It's not really about the game necessarily. It's about the day-long party. And people get out to these stadiums, whether it's New York or otherwise. If it's a 1 o'clock Eastern game, 3, 4, 5 hours ahead of time, they open up the parking lots, and you can bring in a bus, you can bring in a caravan, you can bring in a pickup truck or what have you, bring in your grill, your smoker, your hot griddle, your plates, and you set up for a day-long food fest and drink fest. So there's coolers and fridges. People set up TVs outside so they can watch pregame football coverage, watch other games going on, watch replays of old games. It is a party. And that way, again, you hedge whether your team wins or loses, because if you're a Jets fan, you have not won a Super Bowl in more than 50 years. So you better win the party. And if the party is good, it gives you a reason to keep going out there. So the tailgate here in America is everything. People go out to football games for the tailgate and sometimes never go into the stadium. They just keep partying out in the parking lot until the game is over, to where everybody pours out and keeps partying again. So that is a very special part of the American sporting experience. As for the stadium itself, it is incredible here in the States to just have so many massive facilities that seat 70 and 80,000 people. When you have that many people inside of a stadium and the lights are going off and the video boards are going off, and it's certainly at night, it really is a special thing. But you're also touching on something that we here in America deal with a lot, and it's a problem, which is a short attention span. In football, yeah, there's a lot of action, but it's not continuous. And so in between plays, those 35 seconds, 45 seconds, what's going on? In between quarter breaks and there's a commercial, what's going on? Halftime, what's going on? We need it all the time. So you go to an NFL game and it is lights, camera, action from the moment it kicks off to the moment it ends. There's always something on a video board, a jumbotron, a firework or something like that to keep people into it.
Without insulting your intelligence, Rob, did you understand what was going on the field, or was it about the hot dogs, the burgers, the dance cam, the kiss cam. I don't know. Was it more about the fan experience, or did you take much of the sport in?
I had absolutely no idea what was going
on. Really know
but
who
you know
won,
what?
Really.
But most importantly, it didn't really matter. What I do know is they get really, really, really hyped up about every single thing that happens. There's this one poor lad sat next to me, and I said to him, "Look, I'm really sorry, but I haven't got a clue what's going on here. Can you talk me through it?" And he was the night. That's one of the things I wanted to talk about as well. How friendly people are. Like, you get people from opposing fans sitting right next to each other. So we were at the New York Jets versus the Chargers match, and we had a group of Chargers fans here, and then a load of New York Jets fans, and the banter flying around. They're all joking and laughing. It wasn't hostile at any point. But luckily, this one poor lad had come to watch the Jets game on his own, just basically had to talk me through every single play. I was like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm really happy for them because they seem really, really psyched up about it. But again, one practical thing as well, if you are visiting, you're trying to get tickets and you're going to go to a match, you need to make sure you kind of think about what kind of bag you're taking in, because there's loads of different rules about what you can and can't take in. Again, another level of detail that you won't get anywhere else.
No, but certainly, speaking as a British person involved in the production of this podcast, we like to queue and we like to take a big bag with us that has just about everything in it. So those, it's practical, it's very useful, Rob, so you don't need to apologise for that. Damon, I know you touched on the Giants there, and we've got a very special guest that'll be joining us a little bit later in this episode to talk more on that. But let's move away from MetLife Stadium, shall we, and focus in on NBA next, Rob. Can you tell us, is it more of the same? Lots of entertainment away from the sporting action itself?
Yeah, so the big difference I noticed between the NFL and the NHL and the NBA was we were chatting to some of the people here at the hotel, and I was saying to them, "Oh, what time do you go down to the NFL match?" And they were saying, like Damon says, we leave at, if it's 8 o'clock kickoff, we'll leave at 2 o'clock. The one thing I really noticed different when you go to Madison Square Gardens was you will go and enjoy New York City and Manhattan, and then you will go in for the game. It's more about making sure that you enjoy yourself before you go into the stadium, and then that's when you're there to watch it. That's one of the things I really took from it, Damon. Is that a fair point?
Absolutely. And specifically Madison Square Garden, for the home of the Rangers and the Knicks, is smack dab in the middle of Midtown Manhattan. So you have all of these restaurants, all of these bars, all of these sports bars, entertainment options, all these office buildings, and you can go and hit a million of those, then go right into the arena. You can hit none of them, pop up right in Madison Square Garden at Penn Station with the train and go up to the main level, watch the game, go back down to the train and never even go outside. So you have all of these options in Midtown Manhattan around Madison Square Garden. That really gives it such a mystique. MetLife Stadium, home of the Giants and the Jets, is out in New Jersey, where there's nothing within walking distance. So the party has to be the tailgate. But at Madison Square Garden, you go in, you go out to a bar, and it's all walking. It's all in that little vicinity and area. You go right into the arena and you enjoy the game. But yeah, you can leave if it's really just depends on how long your train ride is in, because as soon as you get off that train, you're basically in the building.
Let's stay with Madison Square Garden, Damon, because I'd like to ask you a little bit more about someone that, sure, within your role as a sports broadcaster, you've been all over the place. You'd have been to so many different iconic sporting arenas, but Madison Square Garden, it really is something special, isn't it? It is steeped in history. We've seen a whole host of different sporting talent in there. For you, though, what makes it so, so special?
Well, Emma, it's very special because Madison Square Garden is the last great historic venue for sports here in New York City. Yankee Stadium was that. Yankee Stadium was built back in the 1920s for Babe Ruth and this dynasty New York Yankees team. But ultimately, they tore it down in 2008 and they moved into a new Yankee Stadium on the site of the old Yankee Stadium right next door, but it's a new facility. Madison Square Garden was built in the 1960s, and it has remained there ever since. They've done some renovations. They've changed some of the seating capacity, but by and large, it's the same exact footprint and building. And so you go in there and you look up to the banners and you look around and you just feel that it really is the Mecca, and it's known as the Mecca. And specifically here in New York City, we love baseball. We love football. We love hockey. But basketball is in the soul of New York City. You look anywhere and kids are playing on blacktop playgrounds and dreaming of playing basketball. And the New York Knicks have always had this mystique around them because they have been the singular New York City basketball team until the Brooklyn Nets moved into the city a couple of years ago. But so the Knicks are the one team that kind of every New Yorker for a long time could say, if you're a New Yorker and you root for basketball, you root for that team. There's no divided alliance or allegiance in a lot of basketball fans in New York City. So to play the Mecca, which has been the home of the NBA, college basketball, March Madness NCAA tournaments, huge boxing matches, the Stanley Cup final, playoff games in hockey. It has had it all. I mean, everything. So you go in there and you absolutely feel as though it's something special. And once upon a time, the circus was in Madison Square Garden as well. So in the old days, you would walk in there for a Knicks game and you would smell elephant dung and peanuts. So there was that. And that really, you know, captures, I think, you know, the history of the place as well.
Well, as you say, Damon, MSG has seen it all over the years, including, of course, many big fight nights. We caught up earlier with the Irish fighter Ian Garry to hear what it was like the night he made his UFC debut at the MSG.
Make my UFC debut at MSG. It doesn't get bigger than this. We just shocked the world. The Irish are back, baby.
There's a certain energy around MSG and the history behind the people who have fought there. The best of the best, the greatest of all different types of sports have competed there. And it's absolutely sensational when you stand in that arena for the first time and you're going in there as an athlete to compete. When you think about the footsteps that walked those corridors, the people that walked out into that venue, it's incredible. And you can't not feel that energy. It's so incredible. The fans are amazing. The way the stadium is built feels even more special. I always look back at that moment and say, I will never ever be as in awe of where I am in the world as that moment because of how special that was. That was my dream. My dream was to make it to the UFC. The rest, I just want to go out and have fun. Because if you set yourself a target, you don't reach it. Whereas if you just go out and enjoy what you do and love every single moment of it, then you're going to achieve way more in my mind. So for me, to be stood at that octagon on MSG, to go out there, get a first round knockout and go back to a successful debut, was a dream come true. The biggest memory that I have of that fight was when I was stood in the octagon and Bruce Buffer turns to me and he's in the red corner and my graphic comes up on the LED screens around the stadium. The fans cheer, the fans start shouting because everyone was excited and had a lot of hype coming into the UFC. And I see the future Ian Garry on the LED screens and Bruce Buffer's calling my name and I'm like, wow, I did it. I'm here. This is it. This is incredible. It was almost that feel of, if you could put yourself into a video game, we've all said this, if you were a footballer and you could be in that game where you could take that World Cup penalty kick, it was that surreal moment for me of, I did it, I made it, right, let's go out and have some fun. Here's a funny thing. I always go out to the stands afterwards and sit and watch the fights if I possibly can. So, early on in my career, I was earlier on in the card. I was down early. So I'd go out there, I'd win, I'd get changed, I'd do all my media obligations, I'd leave the building, and I'd go join my family, my wife, my friends, everyone who was there supporting me. I'd go sit up in the stands and I'd watch the rest of the fights because I'm a fight fan. And to be able to sit down and watch, it was Kobe Covington and Kamaru Usman in the garden for the world title. It's like, to be able to sit there, all right, I just won and competed in the Madison Square Garden myself. And now I get to go watch one of the greatest fights of that year in the same venue. It was so cool. So that's something I like to do. I don't necessarily have the ability to do that now because I fight a lot later on the cards. I'm a much bigger name now, as I should be, because I've done a lot more. But it's, yeah, it's exciting. It was a cool moment to do that. It was freezing cold in New York at the time. It was November, so it was quite cold. However, we did have one really lovely day. I was doing an interview where I was walking around Central Park, and that was beautiful. That was really, really enjoyable. To sit there and see the scene, it always makes me think of Home Alone, where you see like the trunk build and then you see the pond racing, the pigeon lady and stuff. It was awesome. Really, really cool.
Great to hear from UFC fighter Ian Garry there. Now, staying in the garden, let's get a fan's perspective now. An ice hockey super fan, I should say, as we're delighted to be joined by New York Rangers super fan Justin Kaplicki.
I appreciate that. That is a little excessive. I mean, I have the jersey on, watched the game today. They won 5-3. Thank God they didn't blow that lead. So I kept it on all day. I didn't crumple up and throw in a corner. But I do have knickknacks and I have things, but I don't have an entire man cave. I don't have a lot of sticks. So I don't have a lot of other stuff. But I mean, I love this team, and hopefully this year we can get over the hill.
And how did it all begin then? Is this the lifelong thing?
As a Ranger fan, I mean, there's no doubt. I grew up. I'm from Poughkeepsie, New York. I'm completely from Poughkeepsie, liking hockey is about access to it. I certainly didn't do a lot of ice skating as a kid. Really wasn't until my parents realized that I really didn't have it going on much up in my head. So they sent me off to boarding school, and I fell in love with hockey there. And there's no doubt that the Sega Genesis 1991 EA Sports hockey game completely changed my life. And I think a lot of people will say that as well.
I don't think a lot of people realize, Justin, that Rangers are one of the original six, aren't they? So there's like so much history involved in it.
Yes, I couldn't give you all of it. I mean, there are certain highlights I've picked up over the years. But I mean, I've been a serious fan since approximately 1991, I would say. You know, I had a tabletop game growing up. It was an Islanders, Philadelphia Flyers tabletop one, the little rods. I have a very early memory of going to a Ranger game with my parents, and a Rangers Islanders game, and this woman in red tights standing up and yelling, "Pot Man, you suck!" And my brother and I, we just lost. I mean, I was like 4 or 5 when that happened. So it's something I've always enjoyed, but like I really got into it as a teenager, and it's my favorite of all the sports now.
Well, that actually tees us up nicely for the next question. I did wonder what the atmosphere is like at a Rangers game. So quite hostile then.
I wouldn't say that. I think it's pretty friendly, actually. I mean, there's a lot of camaraderie. I mean, there is nothing like going to MSG for a game. I know each city has their own personality, but I don't think people are talking about a boxing match in the Columbus Blue Jackets arena. MSG has so much history, and the city is obviously, you can use all the cliche terms, but it's a melting pot, and it's full of show business, it's full of glitz, it's full of glam, high rollers, it's full of the working class man. But really, there's nothing like going to Ranger Game MSG, and I can tell you right now, playoffs is beyond fathomable. It is just the greatest atmosphere of all time.
Why? Because there's so much at stake.
Absolutely. I mean, Stanley Cup is the ultimate dream, and that was like a Starline poster as a kid growing up. The Starline posters, I don't have any. I should get a whole bunch. I should buy like the old dead stock and sell those. But they're basically wall posters for kids. They look like baseball cards. And I just always remember one. It said Stanley Cup, the ultimate goal. And it was just the Stanley Cup. And it is just the greatest trophy of all time. I have got a little guy here. I got another guy here. He's a special guest today. Here comes Mark Messier. Wee! Here we go. Big one of the figures was great, you know? That's on my desk. It's great to have him around. But it's just the greatest trophy in all sport, and it's the greatest sport in my opinion. For me, NFL is second. I guess baseball comes third, and then basketball is fourth. I mean, I have no idea what a foul is, but for me, it goes Rangers, Jets, Mets, Knicks.
Justin, if you've never been to New York, you don't really realize just how much sport is interwoven into the society. Everywhere you walk, even if you're not going to the match, it's on in a bar or people trying to sell you some kind of New York Jets or New York Knicks or New York Rangers. It's everywhere, isn't it?
Well, it's one of the biggest markets there is. I mean, and no matter where you go in the world, you see people with Yankee hats on, and they're not even the blue and white. It's absurd. I do not like alternate color uniforms or merchandise. It really upsets me. I like the original thing, red, white, and blue. Rangers are the best. Red, white, and blue. It's amazing. Not a big fan of the Liberty uniform. I like the logo and crest across on the diagonal there. That's just my opinion. But sure, New York's amazing. I grew up going down there on weekends with my parents and for conferences and stuff. And we go taking a Broadway show, and we walk along the streets and go to the park and go to Rockefeller Center. And it's pretty good. All those museums, you can, there's so much to do there. It's insane. And I personally prefer when games are on national TV and that there's an 8 o'clock start time, especially if it's on a weekday, get a little more time to pregame at some of the bars around town.
And Justin, you said there kind of what goes on before and after, but what about during a Rangers hockey game? I've seen in the basketball, it can be quite interactive with the fans, can't it, in NBA? But what about NHL? Do you get the fans up on the screens dancing and stuff? Or
this is about making it an atmosphere in the place to be. Bring your kids, bring the family. I have not been to Vegas yet, but I hear Vegas does the greatest show on earth in terms of pregame, intermission, and in between plays and TV timeouts.
I don't mean to brag or boast, Justin, but I think he's talking to someone who found themselves on the big screen when I went to see the Rangers. No biggie.
Really?
Is this recently?
Yeah, Bongo Cam.
Bongo Cam.
Yeah. Justin, what you need to realize, this is the city that never sleeps, and they know stars when they see one. And they looked at me and they thought, that man needs to get on the Bongo Cam. And what happens is, lovely person comes up to you, shoves a camera in your face, and then up on the big screen are two pictures of bongos, and you have to play. And what all I'm saying to you, rocked it.
Next stop, Broadway, Rob.
Can we talk, Justin, about just how special the MSG is, Madison Square Garden? Because its location within Manhattan is like prime, isn't it? It's pretty much bang on in the center. And it's right. Sometimes you'll go to some sporting events and it can feel like it's a million miles away from a city center and not really involved in the local culture, but it could not get more right in the center of New York, and it's just an unbelievable place.
The MSG is incredible. No, people don't realize that the ice arena and the basketball court's on the fifth floor of the building. So like when you get in there, you go up a couple steps, you get in the mezzanine, and then you got to go up escalators. You're like, oh, we got to go. What is happening here? And then you add the whole ceiling and the atmosphere, and it is the world's most famous arena. Billy Joel's going to be finishing up his residency there, which is quite sad. I never got a chance to see him. There's been tons of fights there. There's been tons of amazing games there. Not so much in basketball over the past couple years. I don't know how New York City cannot have a good basketball team. That's just always baffled me. It's just been a crazy number of years since they've actually done well. Obviously, they've done well with baseball. But if you want to talk about MSG as a place to be, they did a huge renovation back in 2013 or 14. They had that sky bridge, which is basically above the ice and above the court. You can sit up there. You can have your beers and your food delivered right to you. I mean, that is an incredible scene, especially if you're a hockey fan and you like to watch how games and plays develop with the X's and O's.
Well, you've spoke a bit about the atmosphere, and you did mention the Islanders a few minutes ago. So tell us a bit about sort of Derby Day rivalry. Is it the Islanders that arranges kind of main nemesis,
the Islanders and then the Devils? You know, for me, more recent pain comes from the Devils. The Islanders have always been a pest. And like I said, growing up, I had that tabletop game. They had won four cups in a row. Rangers can never beat them. So they were always a good girl in the 80s. But at the same time, like what happens is, you know, teams that win championships, they're loyal to their players. And sometimes they can hold on a little too long. And then teams that are championship teams, they obviously at some point are going to have a drop off, especially in hockey. You know, the Patriots kind of proved that wrong in NFL for so many years. Then come the Devils. And in 86, when they came a team, there's a great quote from, it's not a great, but Gretzky would not say it's a great quote, called the Mickey Mouse organization. It seemed like they really kind of took that on and were like, let's kind of took on the underdog role. And they have just been a pain in the butt in the Rangers side more than anything over the past couple of years. And not only the regular season, but the playoffs. It's just unbelievable. We have had incredible rivalries. I would say the Islanders games too, though. There's just so much history there. I'm not a big Islanders fan. I'm not a big Jersey fan. I mean, okay, full disclosure, I was born in New Jersey. I can't help that, but I'm from Poughkeepsie, New York. But I do not like the Devils. I do not like the Islanders.
Justin, I've got to talk to you about tickets. Let's say that someone lands in New York today. There's quite a few sporting events on and around New York, and they want to go and see the NHL. They want to go and see Rangers. How easy or difficult is it to get tickets?
I think it's pretty easy. I wouldn't go up to one of those guys hawking the merchandise on the street we were talking about before. Right? Certainly, there are tons of apps now out there where you can just get tickets all the time. You can obviously go to Ticketmaster. Season tickets, obviously season tickets are going to be sold out entirely when teams are doing well. And I think they actually still advertise Rangers season tickets because they're available. But at the same time, people buy them They can't go. You can't go to every single game. You can't go to all 41 games. It's got to be physically impossible for most people. There's tons of apps out there. Secondary markets available. And I would never buy from anyone out front anymore. I just wouldn't buy. I wouldn't do that. I'd always go through a secondary marketplace.
Well, Justin, thank you so much for your time. It's been amazing to get that insight about the Rangers.
Thanks for having me. It's great talking to you guys. Heavy metal.
Take care. Bye. Best guest ever.
Well, great to hear from Justin there. Now, Rob, you've been busy doing your research. Now it is time for our New York Tourist Top 5.
In at number 5 is the Zappello Bakery. Now, it's not really Rob's Top 5, is it, unless food features heavily. And on this one, we've got you covered to a ridiculous level. Now, I'm going to start with a place that I only discovered this time around on this trip. It's like an unassuming bakery right in the heart of Manhattan. But as soon as you get to the window, you realise that they are serious. The focaccia bread is so deliciously squidgy, I can almost feel it in my mouth. Now, the pizza is next level. But the reason why you should go and make it the first stop on your trip is they do this, like, croissant things. I don't think that's what they're called on the menu, but it's like a round croissant dipped in chocolate, you know, white chocolate or dark chocolate, but it's filled with mascarpone cheese, and it gives me chills just thinking about it. At number 4, it is the High Line. Yeah, I know that this Rob's Top 5 is usually about the stuff that's more off the beaten track, but sometimes things are just popular because they're good. It's like a historic rail line is the High Line that's elevated above West Manhattan. It is like a sanctuary, basically, in all the madness of the city. I went at night and it was all lit up. It feels like you're stepping back into time. It's good to just go there, sit and relax, take in the sights and the sounds of the city, and just feel like you're in an oasis of calm while everything's going on around you. This week's number 3 is the Rockefeller Center. I know, allow it. New York, though, is just one of those places, if you're going to go, sometimes you just got to do the classics. And if you're going to go and do things like go to the rowing lake on Central Park, you want to go somewhere high up, I'd recommend The View. It's like a revolving cocktail bar at the top of the Marriott Hotel in Times Square, if that's your jam, if you like going up into high places. But the Rockefeller Center, it is a stone's throw away from Times Square. And if you're coming to New York, let's face it, you're going to go to Times Square at some point. But when you get there, you just realize how many times you've seen it in films, on different TV shows. It is one of those places where you just feel like you're in the center of the world. And if you're going at Christmas, the ice rink and the Christmas tree is just mwah! Number 2 on Rob's Top 5 things to do when you're in New York City is Daily Provision. Now, I could be recommending a million places for food, and trust me, I will give it a good go. I could be telling you about Los Tacos, which is like a place for Mexican food. I could be telling you about Joe's Pizza, which for me, in a place that loves pizza, that is the number one. But there aren't words created in the English language that describe just how good Daily Provisions is. It's the kind of place where you just want to go and spend as much time as you possibly can. It's also the kind of place where if you felt like you walked in and ordered just like a normal coffee, they'd probably look at you a bit weird. It's the kind of place that loves the green tea matcha lattes, the spiced pumpkins chai lattes. Do you know what I mean? You can get the idea straight away. Now, they do this thing called the everything bagel with salmon and cream cheese. To tell you just how much I love it, last time I came, I was here for 5 days in New York, and I went to Daily Provision 5 times. Now, there's one in Midtown. It's small. You might have to queue, but do it because you will not regret it. And at number 1 is where I'm standing now. It's Dumbo in Brooklyn. If you're looking for that perfect picture of your trip to the Big Apple, this is where you'll find it. So it's just the other side of the Brooklyn Bridge to Manhattan. You can sit here all day if you want and watch the boats whip up and down the East River. It's right down next to the pier as well. Last time I came, me and my mates were here. We had a bit of a kick around. The best backdrop for a kick around you've ever seen in your life, by the way. Some great shops down here, some great cafes, some great delis, but let's face it, you are here for the views. On a night like tonight, it does not get much better. The Manhattan Vista in front of you, at sunset like it is now, half of it is all lit up with the glow of golden hour. The other half just looks majestic. The light is bouncing off the glass-fronted skyscrapers in front of me, but to my left-hand side, as the sun sets with a beautiful orange glow, the silhouette of the Statue of Liberty just stands out, and it is just the most beautiful place that you will ever visit. Get yourself down here. It's Dumbo in Brooklyn. It's number 1.
Well, Rob, first things first, again, you squeeze a lot in there, but I should quickly remind you at this point, this podcast is about sporting Sydney. It isn't exclusively a food guide of certain places in the world. I mean, it does seem that you managed to cram an awful lot of that in, especially for someone with a small stomach.
I could have done a top 50 food places just quite easily, just off the top of my head, just off the bat, but because the food is just amazing. And I suppose the best example of how good it is when I was leaving the Rangers match, it was probably about 10:30 and I was walking back to the hotel. And you know, if where I'm from in Stoke-on-Trent, if I try to get food at 10:30, I've got a 24-hour Tesco and that's about your lot. Whereas here, yeah, you've got every single kind of food within about a 10-minute walking distance. And it's not just all right Chinese food. It's not just all right burger, all right chicken. It's like the best chicken that you'll ever eat. And this just, I could have done 10 lists just solely of food because it is that good. But how good is the place Dumbo though? Did you have a look at that? How good is that?
Yeah, I've just given that a quick Google as I heard you talking about it. And Damon, I imagine you get a lot of locals, but a lot of tourists down there as well because it's just so iconic, isn't it?
It's iconic for tourists. It's iconic for locals as well. That's actually where I proposed to my wife down near the Brooklyn Bridge in Dumbo, because it's just such a magical place. It's right on the water. It overlooks that historic bridge. And you have all those old, wonderful buildings that are turn-of-the-century buildings, cobblestone streets. So it's a really special place. And it's become kind of a sporting hub as well, because in the last 15 years or so, the city has built a lot of communal areas for playing soccer, for playing basketball courts. And so there's playgrounds down there. So there's a lot of team sports and individual sports that you get to congregate there for as well. So it's a pretty special place in New York City.
So speaking of proposals, Damon, do you fancy coming to a little trip to a bakery with me at any point? Obviously, what did you make to mind? Daily Provision, the bagels in Daily Provision.
Rob, are you flirting with me because you want access to another Jets tailgate? Is that what you're...
Maybe. Am I that obvious?
I can get you to a Jet. You got a good list there, Rob. I'm going to give you credit. You know, you come in here and what you want to do as a New Yorker or visiting New York is eat as much as possible. Because as you said, there's the best food all over the place. But you've left off, I think, a very significant place, and that is Katz's Deli. It's a historically great deli. And you were talking about how much you love your turkey sandwich. If you go to Katz's Deli, you will get enough meat on your sandwich for 3 sandwiches. Google an image of Katz's Deli, get a corned beef or a pastrami or a roast beef or a roasted turkey, and they just keep shaving that until it's like as tall as, you know, about a foot high or so. You can't even believe that it's a sandwich. You can't really even close the sandwich. It's so big and filled with meat. And so you eat it sometimes with a fork and a knife. That's okay. I'm going to give you a pass on this. And then you take the next part for your next meal. But you get one of those sandwiches and it legitimately will feed you for 2 to 3 days. We got to get you to Katz's Deli. I'm taking you there.
What the boys?
The way you're describing it, I can picture it so vividly. But if you've just been or you are planning a trip to New York, then we would love to hear about any of your travel hints and tips and see your pictures and videos, especially if there is sandwich content there. So you can follow Sport24 on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram and use the hashtag MySport24 to get in touch. Well, I'm delighted to say that we have a person who has experienced life playing for the world-famous Giants. Jason Bell joins us. Jason, hello.
Hello, hello. How are you doing?
We're very well, thank you. I suppose we couldn't be doing a podcast all about sporting entertainment that New York has to offer and not include the NFL broadcasting giant that is you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And I do love New York, one of my favorite cities in the entire world.
Yeah. So tell us firstly then what that experience is like, you know, as a player pulling on that Giants jersey and living as an athlete in New York City.
It was a dream come true. I grew up a Giants fan. So for me to end up playing there was something I could never imagine. And when you're a Giant in that city, you have so much respect. There's so many Giants fans. They've been born into being a fan of the Giants. But you better win because the pressure is on. So it was a unique experience because the city's so busy. There's so much going on, yet there's so much focus on the New York Giants when the season starts.
Yeah, so that's interesting. You grew up as a Giants fan. I imagine with that, you must have had all these dreams of what it would be like to run out in the MetLife Stadium. So did reality meet expectation? What was it like?
It did. It was surreal. Just looking up. I remember the first time I even played there, I was playing for the Houston Texans. No, actually, I was playing for the Dallas Cowboys, and being in that stadium thinking, wow, this is a dream come true. But then finishing my career as a New York Giant, they're actually rooting for me, not against me. It was unique. And I just remember walking around and being in the city, especially with some of my teammates that were the really well-known guys, and just the response you got from the fans. It was everything I expected about that city. It's something I'll never forget.
Yeah, so how does that arena, that bowl, compare to all the other iconic stadiums that you've played in? Is there anything that makes it that extra bit special?
You know, they're all unique, but what makes it special there is if you start playing bad in New York, your fans will boo you. And that doesn't happen everywhere else. And I love it because that's so New York. It's like, we're going to tell you how it is. So if they don't feel like you're putting on a good performance or a great effort, they will let you know. And that doesn't happen everywhere.
I imagine it's probably, with your stature, your height, quite difficult to keep a low profile walking around New York City as well, isn't it? Or what was it like? Where did you live? Were you in Manhattan?
You know, when I was playing, I was in Jersey. I was in Weehawken, right across the water. But when I retired, I moved to the city. And I lived in Tribeca. I lived in Hell's Kitchen. I've been all over New York. So as soon as I didn't have to go to practice in the morning, I went into the city because I knew it was safe. It was always scary trying to get across that, go through the tunnel or the bridge in the morning. So, yeah. But, you know, walking around the city, when I was with people like my buddy Osi, who I do the television show out here, you couldn't miss him, or my friend Michael Strahan or Antonio Pierce, who's now the head coach of the Raiders. These guys, they couldn't go anywhere. Me, I could. Unless you looked at my ID, I could get away with a lot. And I loved it because of that. I was able to do everything I wanted to in the city. Sometimes people would look at maybe my tattoos and think, hey, I think that's Jason Bell plays for the Giants. But most of the time, I could just maneuver and have a good time like the rest of the New Yorkers.
Of course, you're an athlete, so you wouldn't have been eating hot dogs and cheesecake, would you? And delicious bagels, all this food that New York has to offer.
You had to try it. You had to try it. I remember first time I had like a breakfast sandwich, like a proper breakfast sandwich from a bodega. And I was like, oh, this is a game changer. So yeah, you had to have all of that stuff. All the late night street food, everything. And you had to get a big slice of pizza. It's mandatory.
And what else did you love about New York? On this podcast, we have spoken at length about the food, believe it or not. But what else was there? I mean, what else did your downtime look like?
You know what? I love the culture. I love the people. And of course, that comes with the food. So many of my friends were from all across the world. So they could take me to the restaurants in the city that they thought were best and most authentic to their culture. So that's always cool. And I was an art history major in college. So I loved the museums, had a good time, had a lot of friends in the business. So went to a lot of different shows and things of that nature. So that's always been fun. I remember going to an auction at, I did Christie's and Sotheby's auction one year and just set up there with a guy bidding for crazy paintings. And I was like, this is unreal. I can't believe I'm here. I brought my teammate in there. He was like, I've never seen anything like this in my life. I was like, that's why we live in New York, because this is the kind of stuff that happens. So yeah, just anything you wanted to do, it was available. And you had so many different people doing so many different things, and we had access to them because we were playing for the Giants.
Yeah, I bet with that, you got yourselves into some pretty swanky restaurants, didn't you? Will you tell us what was your favorite? I imagine, as I said, you know, there's some real glitzy sides to the restaurants you were going to, but also, did you like kind of just going downtown, getting a slice of pizza?
All that. My favorite restaurant is in West Village. It's called Le Baratin, a French place, and it's just a vibe. You know, I put a lot. I actually learned about the restaurant through the vice president of the Giants, because he knew the owner. So, I mean, that is my spot, and that is like, it's small. It's just New York, really cool, good vibes. But I've been to all kind of restaurants. I remember when we were winning, and especially when they won the Super Bowl. Even though I wasn't on the team. I was hurt, but I remember going out with them, and the whole restaurant standing up and clapping. And that's just something you never saw in New York. I mean, some of the best restaurants. I remember Del Frisco's, a steak restaurant, just watching that happen and thinking, only in New York. This is crazy. So yeah, we were able to get the best reservations to the top restaurants. There's a place called La Esquina that's so cool. It looks like a taco stand on the outside. You go down two flights of stairs and it opens up. I've seen Jay-Z in there, Beyonce, Oprah. I mean, just craziness. So that's what I bet they were saying,
look over there, there's Jason Bell.
They were saying, why is this guy staring at us like this? We need to get him out of there. What's going on here? But yeah, I was starstruck. I mean, only in New York, you could be at a restaurant and that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah, absolutely. So take us back inside, you know, the stadium, then the MetLife, what it was like playing there, especially on Derby Day. I mean, playing against the Jets, what was all that like?
Well, yeah, you know, I'd say we played against the Jets in the preseason when I was there. It wasn't a regular season game, but when we went against our rivals, whether it was Dallas, Philly, stuff like that, I mean, it was just it felt like you were going into a war. You know, you felt, especially like a night game, all day you could just feel the intensity, the anticipation. You knew it was going to be physical. You knew everybody was watching. That's the thing about playing for the Giants. You had the entire country watching your games. So you felt the pressure, you dealt with it, but I mean, it was just so fun. It's like not a lot of things compare to that because of just the scale and the magnitude of what the New York Giants possess.
What's your favorite memory in a Giants jersey? Is there any one that particularly stands out?
Yeah, probably my last game. We were in the playoffs playing against Philadelphia. And it's probably because it is my last game, but I had to overcome a lot. Started the game, wasn't playing great because I kind of moved positions because somebody got hurt, but ended up playing well. And I just remember like all the emotions of overcoming that, like questioning myself, but then responding and then doing well and people helping me, you know, teammates and stuff like that. And because it was my last game, I always remember never to quit on myself because of that. Like I've been in that situation and no matter what happens, trust yourself, continue, press on, all those kind of things we are taught when we were kids. And I was able to do it out there in the uniform I love and the team I love. And I'll never forget that.
So often with sport, you get this, don't you, where even if we wrote a script, it almost wouldn't be that perfect at the end, how the story you just mentioned there, and, you know, for it to be your childhood team as well in a city like New York. Do you look back on that last part of your career, even though there were difficult moments there as well, that in some ways it was almost quite perfect?
Yeah, it was all perfect. And it's funny you say that because I look at what I'm doing now, where I am now, my life now, and it would have never happened if I don't get hurt. Yeah. You know, I don't meet the mother of my child. I don't have my daughter. I'm not in London. Like all the great things that have happened don't work out unless I get hurt. And so you're like, yeah, this was exactly how it was supposed to happen. And you kind of go off in life and whatever happens, whatever twists and turns occur, you understand because you've been through it that there's another side of it. And you'll make it through. And it's kind of like, hey, what's on the other side of that mountain? It could be fun. I could enjoy it. So yeah, the game has taught me that. The good things and the bad things that I've had happen to me within the game that I love, but it's all worked out.
And all under the beautiful bright lights of New York City. When you weren't playing, did you get much downtime to explore the other sport the city has to offer? I mean, you're spoiled, aren't you? The NBA, NHL, there's so much going on.
Oh, yeah. One of the first things I did was go to a Knicks game. Went to a basketball game and was like, oh my gosh, this is what it looks like on TV. You know, I was like, wow, this is amazing. I remember them turning the lights down and I was like, oh yeah, this is fresh. Going to hockey games. I used to love going to hockey games. It was just so fast, so intense. It's such a great live sport. So did all that. Obviously, all the baseball games, you had to do it. I mean, I did it all. I went to every single game. From even when tennis was in town, you know, I used to always go to the U.S. Open, all of that stuff. I did it all because that's what New York is for and that's what it's about. So I always found a way to find some tickets, call them some favors. But yeah, I've done it all. And even when I go back, I make sure I do.
Well, we're coming towards the end of this chat, and you've touched on it a bit already, but I imagine now as a broadcaster, it must just be a beautiful thing being able to go around and kind of do all this again, take it all in. But now, yeah, from like a commentary box perspective.
Yeah, it's unique. I feel like I know more about the game than I did when I played. I mean, I knew my position and I knew what I was supposed to do. But now, holistically, I just look at the game differently. And yeah, I'm just, everything I do is from the eyes of a fan. Like, I'm sitting with my friends and we're watching a game, but I'm the one friend that actually did it, you know? So it's like, yeah. I can give that little like, well, this is why, or have you ever thought of this? And I really enjoy that, because that's what it's all about. We watch these sports because we love them, whether it's, you know, we grew up liking them, or it's an escape or whatever. You like the competition, but it's all about getting around family and friends and enjoying it. And that's what I do. That's how I approach this whole thing. And I love it. You know, it's something I want to do for the rest of my life because I love the sport. I love what it's done for me and the people I love. So, yeah, as long as I can be involved, I will.
Yeah. If anyone's listening to this and on their way to New York or contemplating a trip there, are there any must do's whilst they're there or anything else that you've not mentioned that you think, yes, if you're in New York, even if it's only for a few days, do this.
If you're in New York and you can go to a sporting event, whatever it is, just because you get a real good vibe of what New Yorkers are, and just experience it all. Don't just do tourist stuff. Just move around and follow your interest. Whatever you want to do, walking the city, if the weather permits, is always what you should do. Going through Central Park is a must. It is a must. So just enjoy. It's got so much to offer. One of the most beautiful cities in the world. Great people. I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Well, Jason, thank you so much for your time. It's been amazing to hear about your memories of living in New York. But I know you're a busy man, so we'll let you go. But thank you, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Now I want to go to New York right now.
I know. My stomach's rumbling after all that talk about food.
No, look what we've done.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. That was fun.
Well, great to hear from Jason Bell there, former New York Giants player. And that means, well, we've covered an awful lot so far in this episode. NFL, NHL, NBA. And believe it or not, there is still plenty to talk about. Damon, we haven't even mentioned Flushing Meadows yet.
Which is pretty amazing. It goes to show you how many different places there are that host world-class sports. But yeah, Flushing Meadows is the home of the U.S. Open in tennis, a two-week party. If you talk to anybody in New York, even if you're not a tennis fan or you're not up to date on the latest tennis news, you have to go to the U.S. Open because it is just a total it's a fiesta. People go early. It's very loud. It's very rambunctious. It's very young. It's electric. And I think anybody that goes to tennis events across the world knows that when you come to the U.S. Open in the city, it really is the best party out of the tennis circuit. So that's really special over there. And right next door is the home of the other baseball team, the New York Mets. And so the Mets ballpark is more new than some of the other historic places around New York. It was built about 10 years ago, but it's largely considered one of the best facilities of any sports stadium or arena here in New York. It's got great food options. It's got great sight lines for every fans. It's kind of a family-friendly atmosphere as well. So a lot of kids come to games, families come to games, and it's a special place. I spend a lot of time there at Citi Field, and I can say I never have the same meal twice, and that's good because the Mets aren't always the best team to watch on the field. So I get my money's worth in the stands with what I eat.
So that I've been lucky enough to go to that stadium, see the Mets, and it is an unbelievable stadium. So that's the Mets in the baseball. The other big, obviously, sports stadium when it comes to baseball in New York is where the Yankees play. But also, this is where it gets a little bit confusing, it's also the home to FC New York, isn't it, where the Yankees play. People that like football will remember FC New York for many different reasons. Obviously, the MLS is getting a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be when I came over here. But they'll remember the fact that Frank Lampard played out there, Pirlo played out there, and David Villa played there all at the same time.
Yeah, the NYCFC crowd has been dying for its own stadium for a while, because when you try to retrofit a baseball ballpark to fit a soccer stadium, a soccer field, it obviously is very curious. It's very unique, and fans have been wanting a true soccer stadium, and NYCFC has had some success. Well, they finally got that. So they're going to be finally moving out of Yankee Stadium in the coming years and building a soccer-specific stadium next to Citi Field, home of the Mets. So that will be a whole sports complex there where the Mets baseball team plays, NYCFC plays its soccer games, and then you'll have the U.S. Open and Flushing Meadows tennis courts, Arthur Ashe Stadium, just next door. So it's going to be a pretty cool place over there. And NYCFC has really built a pretty nice following in only being here for X number of years. There's been a lot of loyal fans that have jumped on the bandwagon for NYCFC. So it'll be fun to see them in a soccer-specific ballpark.
It was amazing to see them a couple of years ago because the fans that I remember behind the goal, it was like their own version of ultras. They like properly got into it. They got some good, they got some decent chants. So that's one of the MLS sides. There is another MLS side in New York, which is the New York Red Bulls, which play in New Jersey. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, because Premier League and Champions League has become so much bigger here in the States, there's a lot of American sports fans that have wanted to adopt the European fandom around soccer and bring it here. And so if you go to a Red Bulls game or you go to an NYCFC game or other MLS stadiums, you'll see there are super fans, there are ultras, there are hardcore fans that have huge banners and they have chants and they have songs and they have choreographed numbers. They wear costumes and they've really wanted to bring that, which makes, you know, international soccer so special, and bring it here. So it's a pretty cool atmosphere that's building, and it grows basically every season as something a little bit bigger.
Now, we're coming towards the end of this episode, Damon, but one thing that we like to do each time is speak to our person on the ground, a true local, and get a word that we can use exclusively in that sporting city. So do you have any New York slang that might be able to help anyone on the ground that isn't from New York, just make them sound a little bit more local and give them more of a chance to fit in when they're visiting New York City?
Absolutely. I'll give you two of them. Number one, bing bong. This is the calling card right now of the New York Knicks. A crazy super fan who had one too many drinks, I think, was caught on camera after a Knicks win a couple of seasons ago saying bing bong. And so now if you go to a Knicks game, you'll hear this on the Jumbotron. You'll hear fans chanting it outside the stadium going into the arena. People say bing bong after a big shot, bing bong. So you can use that. That's from me. The second thing is, and this is very versatile, it's a phrase that a New Yorker could use in almost any situation, forget about it. Okay, so this means that if your football team is winning the game by 30 points, forget about it, we're going to win this game. If your team is losing by 30 points, forget about it, this team stinks. If somebody asks you a question about your team, forget about it, you don't know what you're talking about. If the referee has a bad call, forget about it, his referee's a bum. You can use this in many different situations. And even better for Rob, who's going to go to Katz's Deli, when he orders this sandwich and it's as big as a dump truck and he shoves it in his face, somebody's going to turn around and go, good sandwich? And Rob's going to go, forget about it.
I was going to say, Rob, if you start to feel guilty about your fifth cheesecake of the day, just forget about it.
Forget about it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And what about you, Rob, when you've been on the ground? Is there anything that you've picked up?
Not so far yet. The sounds of New York, and I know this sounds like so, like, you can't really put a word to it, but it's, you walk out into the streets and it's the beeping of the taxis. It's the everything just sounds different here. And, you know, you walk past the, I always thought it was on films, you know, when the smoke comes up from the subway, Damon, you'll know about this, the steam. It's just the sound that makes. Everything about New York for me is just amazing.
Well, see, I love you, Rob, because it's how you phrase it. Most of us in New York just call that noise. It's just noise everywhere. But you're like, it's the rhythm, it's the melody of New York City. So you're doing a good job selling this.
Well, guys, bing bong, that brings us to the end of our episode. Damon, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us talking all things New York City, one of the globe's most recognizable cities. And as Damon's been saying, certainly a sporting mecca. So if you're traveling soon, do check out Sport24's live sports schedule at sport24live.com to make sure that you won't miss any of the biggest sporting events live, in the air, or at sea, as Sport24 really does have it all. So that just leads me then to say a huge thank you to our guest, Damon Amendolara, for brilliantly guiding us around the city.
Well, thanks so much, Emma. This was a lot of fun.
Ah, forget about it. And my trusty TikToking travel companion, Rob Adcock. Rob, I'll see you this side of the pond, perhaps a few pounds heavier, will I?
I think Sydney or Tokyo next. Fancy that on the little trip.
But please make sure you subscribe to the pod to hear more trips of our travels to other sporting cities such as Melbourne, Miami and London. And we'll be back soon exploring other destinations like Dubai and Doha. So from me, Emma Saunders, and the On Tour with Sport24 gang, is goodbye. And until next time, bing bong, safe travels.